You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. Now, while the data varies, almost 2 babies per 1,000 newborns have some kind of hearing loss. And unfortunately, hearing loss is becoming more commonplace in youth because of noise in our environment. In 2013, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention estimated that 12.5% of children and teens between the ages of 6 and 19 have suffered permanent damage to their hearing due to excessive noise exposure. So what do you need to know as a parent when it comes to hearing loss in your child? Joining me live in studio to talk more about this are pediatric audiologist Dr. Jess Stishennan, speech-language pathologist Susie Jones, and Gretchen Fors, a mom whose children have hearing loss. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Thanks
for having us.
Let's start first question about hearing loss in newborns, because if a baby is born in a hospital in this day and age, they get tested for hearing. And maybe Susie or Dr. Hennen, you can answer this. Why do we do that as newborns?
Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. Before 2000, we actually weren't screening any newborns, but there was a lot of research done that showed that if we don't screen any newborns and we just look at risk factors for hearing loss, we'd only catch about 50% of the babies that had hearing loss at birth. So after some research done in Rhode Island, mm-hmm. We started the newborn hearing screening programs across the country. Idaho is actually one of the last few states that doesn't have any legislation to do it, but we screen 98% of the babies in Idaho. So it's really amazing what we do here. But by doing so, we're catching hearing loss earlier and we're able to give intervention much earlier.
Because I was doing some research and what I found was that it's that early intervention is critical, especially if you can catch it before 6 months of age, correct?
Correct. Yes. There's been a lot of research to show that those kids that we can intervene before 6 months of age are going to be where other children are at first grade level by the time they're in first grade.
So, Susie, I mean, you work with these kiddos
right.
and everything. And so historically, before 2000, it seemed that rarely was a child diagnosed before the age of 2 years old.
Right.
So when you see a child coming in or a baby coming in, let's say at like 6 months, 9 months old versus mm-hmm. 2 years old, is there a noticeable difference?
Yes, most definitely. Because if their hearing loss is identified early, their chance to develop spoken language skills comparable to their hearing peers is much greater. Early intervention helps because the delay is less if you can intervene sooner. Mm. And you can kind of treat it in a developmentally synchronous approach. So as those skills would typically develop in a typically hearing child, mm-hmm. you can help that child with hearing loss develop the skills as well and minimize any kind of delays.
You know, it's fascinating because babies can't even talk, right?
Right, right.
So it's interesting just to think that, okay, but you can work with them.
Exactly.
At such a young age.
Parents and others often say, well, why does he or she need speech therapy? They're not even talking yet. And I think that's just a misperception because language and speech development happens much sooner than a child's first words. Mm. We know that children start using words at about 12 months of age, maybe a little sooner. But to get to that point, they have to be hearing those words for 11, 12 months. And actually, hearing starts before birth, at 20 weeks gestation. So our babies are hearing even before they're born. So if they're born with a hearing loss, they're already starting behind. Mm-hmm. So the sooner we can intervene and give them the technology to help them hear speech, the sooner we're able to help them produce speech.
And Gretchen, you've been on the program before talking a bit about your story, but get us updated because your kiddos have hearing loss.
Yes, I have 3 daughters who have hearing loss.
And when were they diagnosed?
So actually, interestingly enough, my children, my oldest was diagnosed about 6 months. And then the second one actually was diagnosed about age 10. She has different hearing loss than her siblings, but mm-hmm. she has unilateral loss. And then the third child, you would think that I've already had a child with hearing aids, that by the third child I would have the drill down. She actually passed her newborn screening test and then failed a 6-month follow-up because her other siblings had hearing loss. She went back in for a 6-month evaluation. And it was actually our early intervention specialist who said to me, hey, maybe you should get her rescreened because she wasn't, you know, making babbling sounds and things like that. And once again, you would think as a parent with other children with hearing loss already in the family, I would have been totally cued into those things. Instead, I just thought, oh, I'm glad she's so calm because my other two kids are wild. So, you know, and I think that often too, like if I could miss this, right, if it took a second pair of eyes to notice this in a child where I was already hyper aware of looking for these signs and symptoms, how many times does it get passed off as, oh, they're just quiet. Oh, they're just, you know, luckily she has a super great disposition. She was happy, quiet. I thought, well, she's happy and quiet, so we're good.
and I'm good, right? So, Dr. Jess, Gretchen brings up some really good points about those signs and symptoms. Are there things that parents can be looking for? Because what's concerning is the fact that a baby can pass a newborn test, but then maybe fail. But like if you wouldn't have a family history, you wouldn't come back in for a 6-month test.
I mean, there are risk factors that we identify when newborns are in the hospital. So some of the NICU babies that are very sick, they're going to have risk factors identified by the hospital, and they're going to be recommended to follow up before their first birthday. But those kids that don't have those typical neonatal risk factors that we look for really is dependent on the parent and the pediatrician to look for those signs of development. Are they falling behind in any milestones? Are they making eye contact with you when you're communicating with them? Are they having chronic ear infections? My son was born with normal hearing and lost hearing in one ear at 5 because of chronic ear infections. Mm-hmm. And so things can happen. Other things to look for, behavioral issues. Sometimes, you know, we think kids are being naughty, but sometimes it's that they're not hearing us and they're not hearing the directions that they're supposed to be following. So I think all of those things are things to rule out a hearing loss if they're noticed by parents or pediatricians.
You know, another snippet that I was reading about was that sometimes parents can be embarrassed or maybe feel a little bit of shame around their child maybe suffering some hearing loss. Susie, do you see that by the time parents, you know, come and talk with you? Because I would think that's just you want your kiddos to do well, and but that can be a really hard thing to move through.
Right. I think, you know, all of us as parents, we want our children to fit in. And I think it stems from that embarrassment. Or will my child look different? Or will they stand out if they need to wear hearing aids or a cochlear implant or something? And I think hopefully through education and coaching with the family, they recognize that the hearing aids or a cochlear implant or having a hearing loss is nothing to be ashamed about, that we have the technology and the tools to help the child fit in school and socially by developing those language and listening skills.
Go ahead, Gretchen.
So as I have served as a guide by your side for a program, and that's a parent who has had a child with hearing loss who helps another parent who's identified. Mm-hmm. And so that identification process usually happens with the newborn hearing screen. And so I was sometimes tasked with following up with the family. And I mean, I could see their audiogram and knew that the child definitely had hearing loss. But when I would talk with the parent, they'd say, oh, they hear me fine. They hear when the door slams and they look at me and they do these things. And so the thing about mild to moderate hearing loss is sometimes I think we all want to justify. We all want that perfect baby. Mm-hmm. And so it can be really easy to justify they can hear, so I don't know why people are so concerned. Mm-hmm. And that was always heartbreaking to me to realize these kids could be getting help sooner if their parents would realize it's really not that big of a deal. And even with our situation, my oldest daughter was identified around 6 months, but she had a mild to moderate loss. And even at the time, some of the professionals were like, oh, she's fine. She has one good ear. She'll be okay. And part of the issue was we were in a state that they didn't help cover hearing aids. And so it's really hard to then ask the parent, oh, your child looks like they can hear, participate with you, and now you need to spend, you know, $2,000 to $5,000 for hearing aids. It's a really hard sell for the parent. And so I think that they were just thinking, hoping that she was going to do great and do well. And luckily, when it was time, she got her hearing aids in kindergarten, and she's done great and done well because we followed up and things like that. But just really realizing it's not a big deal. You know, my kids think it's total, their hearing aids are cool, their magic ears, and that getting them the help that they need really helps them reach their potential.
And Dr. Jess, what about those kiddos who are profoundly deaf? My oldest brother was deaf at birth, you know, so sign language. I mean, that is, so sometimes, I mean, when you have complete hearing loss, hearing aids aren't going to work.
Right. When we get to that point where hearing aids aren't an option anymore to help them hear better, there's other technology like cochlear implants that can be pursued. And there's other means of communication like sign mm-hmm. language that patients can look into as well. You know, with newborn hearing screening, we see a lot more families choosing to implant their children because you can do that at by 1 year of age. And so we're seeing that happen mm-hmm. a lot more. But those kids sometimes do have to have a supplemental language, such mm-hmm. as sign language, for communication, maybe when they don't have the cochlear implant on.
Gotcha.
And there's families who also just choose to use sign language as well, just because it's another language for their family mm-hmm. to have.
And very quickly, before I let you go, I want to quickly talk about this hearing loss in kids that we're seeing from the 6 years to 19 years old based on like more noise. Mm-hmm. When I read that, the first thing I thought was like, oh my gosh, I let my kids wear headphones because I don't want to hear the iPad or I don't want to hear this. Is that part of the problem? Or is it just, I mean, or is it because excessive noise in our society?
I mean, it partly is due to some noise-related things, but it just, there's environmental factors that are happening. There's also delayed onset hearing losses that are happening that we find all the time. Genetics. Mm-hmm. So noise is a part of it, but there's so many factors with hearing loss that it can be really truly genetics or some other environmental factors. The one thing we do know as audiologists is that the one thing we can control is noise. So if we're going to try and protect our ears from anything that we can control, it would be from loud noise exposure.
So things like, I mean, like, so we've taken our kiddos to like the rodeo, right? Mm-hmm. And it's loud. You put, you know, the noise canceling headphones on them, especially when they're little. So being mindful of things like that.
Yes, being mindful of that. A lot of people forget things like fireworks on the 4th of July. How close are they to those fireworks? When your kid's a teenager and you start having them mow the yard, headphones or some kind of noise protection for that, because those sounds can be very damaging at long exposed levels.
So this, so these are things that we should be doing long term with our children, not because I think of when they're little, you bring the headphones to events.
Mm-hmm. This is something that everybody should be doing.
Okay. Good to know. Yeah,
right? I grew up here in Boise. I remember going to my first concert as a teenager, and my best friend's dad was an ENT, and he brought us earplugs. So
uncool.
This was years ago. Right. Years ago, right. Yeah. And so, you know, just that, like, he was also mindfully aware that, you know, and even for adults, like, we need to be careful because mm-hmm. adults can also hurt your hearing from long-term exposure to noise. And, you know, I just was thinking about how many kids get summer jobs mowing lawns and don't realize that they're mowing lawns all summer and they're probably damaging their hearing.
I want to thank you all for coming in today. Good information. And hopefully there's a parent out there who maybe has had an aha moment, which is important. My guest today, pediatric audiologist, Dr. Jess Stesch-Hennen, speech language pathologist, Susie Jones, and Gretchen Fors, a mom whose children have hearing loss. Thank you again.
Thank you.
I'm Gemma Gaudette. You're listening to Idaho Matters.